Welcome to the NewsHour. We begin in Japan. That's where G7 leaders are meeting in Hiroshima. The group has agreed new sanctions. They say, quote, starve Russia of G7 technology, industrial equipment and services that support its war machine. Let's go live to Hiroshima and speak to Rob McBride. So Ukraine, the war in Ukraine is top of that agenda, Rob. And there's some confusion over whether President Zelensky will be attending in person or not. What more do we know?
That's right. The opening day of this G7 and the agenda being dominated, as expected, by the war in Ukraine. But the one world leader who's actually been making all the headlines on this first day is not actually here. That's Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine, because there has been swirling speculation since the very start of this day that he would actually be attending in person on the last day. That would be on Sunday. It was originally anticipated that he was only going to be making a video address via a remote connection, but then it was widely reported very early on that he would actually be making the journey to attend in person to press the case for more support for his country, not only amongst the G7 members who are widely committed to supporting Ukraine, but also amongst many other world leaders who've been invited here as guests, especially world leaders from non-aligned nations or neutral nations. So it was seen as a very significant development. Then much later in the day, reports from Ukraine itself seem to indicate that it is back to the original plan of just a remote appearance via video link. We are hearing from the Ukraine's Security and National Defense Council that it will be the case. He will not actually be making the journey here. He will be addressing by a video link. Nonetheless, there has still been the agenda's been dominated. A lot of the discussions have been dominated by the Ukraine war and also support for Ukraine and condemnation for Russia. The new sanctions have been announced, also new measures to prevent Moscow from getting round some of those sanctions. And also, they have G7 members have issued a lengthy statement outlining their position. There isn't anything particularly new there. It is a repeat of the condemnation of Russia, support for Ukraine. But interestingly, there is one passage there that calls for the complete unconditional withdrawal of Russian troops and equipment, and that should be a precondition and must be included, according to this statement, in any calls for peace. Now, that would seem to be a sideways swipe at China, because its much vaunted peace proposal outlined a few months ago calls for an immediate ceasefire, all well and good, but without demanding that Russia gives up any of the territory that it has taken illegally, effectively freezing the front lines in place, which is not acceptable to Ukraine by association, not acceptable to its Western supporters.
Right. And Rob, let me ask you about the significance of the location, because how significant is it that the summit is being held in Hiroshima?
This was a hugely symbolic day. The G7 members with the Japanese hosts attended the Hiroshima Peace Park, which commemorates the attack 78 years ago that had effectively destroyed the whole of Hiroshima, especially significant for Fumio Kishida, the Japanese prime minister. He is an MP from this city. He wanted to show his G7 partners just the evils of a new nuclear attacks. It has to be noted that three of the G7 partners are members of the original nuclear club, if you like, France, the UK, and the US. And Kishida has called for all countries, despite the rise in tensions, the rise in conflicts around the world, to give up at some point their nuclear weapons.
Okay, thank you. That's Rob McBride reporting for us from the G7 summit currently taking place in Japan. We can also speak to Tristan Naylor, who's the deputy director of the G7 and G20 research groups. He's also an assistant professor of history and politics at Cambridge University. And you're joining us as well from Hiroshima. Good to have you with us. Thanks for speaking to us. So Rob was just mentioning that much of the rhetoric sort of leading up to the summit and at the summit has been on these newly announced sanctions on Russia, as well as the war in Ukraine will be dominating that agenda. How important is it for these leaders to be putting on a united front when it comes to Ukraine?
It's of supreme importance. It's exactly what the G7 did when they met last year in Germany. Of chief importance was communicating that they were united, that a wedge could not be driven between them, despite having some differences with respect to policy, particularly around energy coming from Russia, and also divergences on in terms of what sort of material support they can provide to Ukraine. But nonetheless, even despite small differences, it was really important for them last year and as important for them this year to communicate unequivocally that they are in this together with Ukraine in support of Ukraine.
Right. So do you expect then any significant breakthroughs?
Well, I think if the Ukrainian president does, in fact, come here, it is going to be an incredible opportunity, particularly for him in rallying others to the cause. And most notably, particularly if he comes on Sunday, this is when the Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, is going to be here. And of course, Modi over the past year, well over a year now, has maintained an ambivalent position with respect to Russia, not outright condemning them, indeed very recently affirming the friendship with Russia as being unbreakable. This is an opportunity for Zelensky himself. This is an opportunity for the G7 to try to bring Modi into the fold and change his and his country's position.
And what about sort of other items on the agenda? Because we understand that China might be a talking point as well. Do you expect any, what do you expect to happen when it comes to China?
China will unquestionably be, much like Russia, the other big elephant not in the room. And the geopolitics surrounding China are also at the top of everybody's minds here, particularly with respect to Taiwan. And you know, this is one of the things that's particularly significant about Japan hosting this this time around, in that they are very much taking the lead, certainly as the regional actor of significance here in crafting G7 policy with respect to China, and particularly with respect to China and Taiwan. And so I think we can see, expect to see in the communique an awful lot of language directed squarely at China.
Right. And when you look at Japan's role in particular when it comes to the G7 meeting, I mean, what's your analysis of Japan's foreign policy and the direction that it's taking? You were talking about the direction just a moment ago, and also the fact that it's being hosted in Hiroshima.
Well, one of the things that I think is really, really fascinating about Japanese foreign policy right now is I'm fairly certain, I'm fairly confident in saying that we're very much at an inflection point. Japan has committed to increasing defense spending in an order of magnitude that has not been seen since the end of the Second World War. The Japanese have begun increasing the posture of their military. One of the things that I think is quite significant is that the British Prime Minister and the Japanese Prime Minister, when they met yesterday, they met on Japan's light aircraft carrier. That is of symbolic significance. I think what we're about to see is in the coming years is a far more active Japan in the world and more active in the security sphere.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Tristan Naylor. Thanks for speaking to us from Japan. Now, speaking of China,